Welcome to Mary's Cup of Tea, the self-love podcast for women. I'm your host, Mary Jolkowski, an author, speaker, and all-around self-love advocate. And this is the podcast that will inspire you to love yourself. Hello, self-lover. Before we dive into today's podcast episode, I want to make sure you know about my two books on self-love. If you're struggling with body image or self-acceptance, then I highly recommend you check out my first book, The Gift of Self-Love. It's a comprehensive workbook to help you build confidence, recognize your worth, and learn to love who you are. Thousands of people have this book, and the 5-star reviews are so amazing. They give me so much life. So I hope that this is something that can help you too. You can get it wherever books are sold by searching for The Gift of Self-Love or go to my website, maryscupoftea.com/book. After releasing The Gift of Self-Love and reading all your positive feedback, I realized that we really needed something to keep us going every single day. So not a deep dive workbook, but maybe like a micro dose of self-love in your daily life, which is why I wrote 100 Days of Self-Love. It's a guided journal with, you guessed it, 100 prompts that cover so many areas of life, including body, identity, purpose, emotions, mindset, relationships, and more. So you can really think of it as a metaphorical multivitamin, something to keep you going, or as I like to say, growing on your self-love journey. You can get this journal wherever books are sold as well by searching for 100 Days of Self-Love or go to maryscupoftea.com/journal. It's my mission to share all the self-love tea with you, so I hope that both my books and this podcast can do just that.
Welcome back, ladies and germs. Men are definitely germs. Buckets full of wood germs. You see, girls often wear their hearts in their sleeve. Most men have germs on their sleeves.
Great. We're going to open with exactly that.
Hey, babe.
Hi. Happy anniversary.
High five.
Yeah, high five. Yeah. Can we do a tea cheers?
Tea cheers. Let's do it.
I'm drinking hibiscus heart.
You naturally
are drinking reheated coffee, which is a crime. Well, happy 1 year, first wedding anniversary, and 5 years together dating.
Yeah.
We met on March 24th, and then we got married 4 years later on March 23rd. So because we have these two special dates, the same weekend, we decided to do a 2-day anniversary celebration.
And there's so much more to come. I mean, we've reached this milestone too.
5 years is big.
5 years is the longest relationship that I've had.
Same.
To date.
I think with 5 years, we've been through a lot. We've really had to communicate. We've been in therapy. We've done all the things, I think, enough for me to speak about relationships comfortably.
Yeah. Yeah. Better you than me. But at the same time, I feel more secure than ever in our relationship and myself as well. And through therapy specifically, I mean, we've overcome quite a bit. And I think that has helped us connect on such a different level that I don't think we would have been able to reach without it.
True. Do you think being married is different? Does it feel different?
Being married to Mary. How wonderful it is. I'm the last out of all my childhood friends to get married. So they are already on the departure of their kids because they're in their teens.
They're about to become empty nesters.
Yeah, and I wanted to do a lot more discovery of myself before I got married and before I started having kids. But being married is such a wonderful feeling to me. I did not expect it. And to me, it's one of those things that I can say proudly that I'm married. And my partner is such an incredible person. Yes, that's you.
Your wife for life.
My wife for life. My life is my wife. That's something that I say on a daily basis. Life with you.
I'm so obnoxious about it. I will take any opportunity to come into a store or a restaurant or anybody and be like, have you seen my husband? Or I'll talk to your cousins and instead of saying your name, I'll be like, my husband, this, yeah,
or
my
your
husband,
cousin,
that.
Or your brother, yeah. My husband.
One big thing that changed that I find myself a little bit like uptight about is being very picky with my friends and like who I let into our circle and our home. Cause now I just feel very protective over the unit. Whereas before, like there was this separation of church and state. Now it's like, it's us, you know?
Yeah, I could definitely relate to that. And I think we've had conversations time and time again about the people that we let into our lives and into our home specifically. And that bond between you and I has grown so much that we are very cautious of the people that we are surrounded to a point where, you know, in our wedding episode, we talked about the guest list. And I brought up one thing, which is these are people that I know, but I would not have them a part of our family in a sense, right? I don't want our kids to be surrounded by people who act this way or think this way because it has an effect on everyone, right? And you've mentioned time and time again, you are the average of your friends. And to a point, that's very true.
To an extent, that's very true.
Yeah, to an extent.
Okay, fight me on that because you, you have some friends. It's not that I don't like them. I do like them. I just am at a point where I want to hang out with people who inspire us. And I don't know if that's mean and judgmental. It probably is. But I also, I've drifted and I've let go of so many of my friends who weren't supportive or conducive to like what I want to build for our family's future.
And it's so, so challenging because, you know, some of my childhood friends might act or think a certain way, but then we've been exposed to the other side of it. So some of our friends and your friends in California and in Colorado, like we had wonderful conversations and spent multiple nights together. And that kind of paved the way for what a friendship should be.
I do believe that it's like dating with friends, that if you have somebody who's like an energy suck or somebody is taking your time or somebody who's just calling you to kind of shoot the shit, that is like energetically taking up space from good friends, just like dating, like just like if you're in a weird situationship or you're like hooking up with somebody because you're a little bit lonely, but you actually want a long-term partner. It's not that you can't meet somebody, like physically you can, but energetically you're holding yourself back. You're blocking yourself from that person that's for you because your time and energy and attention is spent, you know, with the surface level.
Yeah, very well put. Very well said. You kind of on this growth spur in life and then there's an anchor and it can be your friends, your family. You feel like a bird in a cage that you just can't fly away. And spread your wings.
Yeah.
In a sense, right?
I think, yeah, energy is really important. But all that to say, being married feels amazing. Somebody said that people have told them that first year is the hardest. I have heard mixed things. My therapist said like the odd numbers, like 1, 3, 5, 7. I know some people really believe in 7, especially just because you 7 years is kind of like how your cells and biology change. So every 7 years, I definitely feel like a little crisis happening where just I've been doing something for so long. And every 7 years, it seems like there's kind of a tipping point. So we're not there yet. We can't talk about that. But first year, is it the hardest? Was it difficult? I think that's more for people who only date for a year or two and then quickly get married. And then that comes with like moving in together and wedding planning and family meeting. Whereas our lives were really like long-term partnered in a serious way when we got married. So I can't say that for me personally, like I can't say like, oh, this was so hard. Like it was probably easier than what, year 3 or 4 for sure.
Yeah, I think we went through some obstacles in year 3 and 4. Not to say that the first year of marriage itself is for most people concerning because I think people change and evolve year after year. So I look at myself and my goal is to look back and reflect every single year. And the hope there is that I don't recognize the person that I was on a yearly basis because the goal is to grow and outgrow yourself on a yearly basis. And I think through marriage, you can't stop someone from growing. And the most important thing, I think, is growing together and respecting each other and each other's path. So it's kind of life is a road and both of us have the steering wheel. And when you turn left, I'm there with you. When you turn right, I'm there with you. So the first year of marriage definitely throws some obstacles, like you said. The wedding, you got to plan for that. And then you have to deal with the finances afterwards. The honeymoon, you have to deal with that as well. And I don't know what statistically speaking is, but pregnancies in the first year after marriage can be a big thing as well, or a big hurdle. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's why I loved our wedding episode. And that's not to say that eloping isn't cool. It can be. And I understand why people do it. I'm really glad we chose to go with a wedding, a small wedding, but still, because I feel like it's like a rite of passage. You go through a lot of those things that most people fight about in the first year, like merging families and finances. And how are you going to pay for this wedding? You're planning a big trip, probably the biggest one you've taken. And so many things that go into that wedding planning journey that hopefully by the time you're on the other end of it, things feel a lot easier. And we have friends who have been engaged, went on this whole like wedding planning journey and didn't make it. But it's better then than after you're married. You know what I mean? Like, it's better to find out earlier rather than later. Everybody needs to listen to that episode because there was so much like intention and obstacles we had to overcome and things that we thought through that I think could alleviate for other couples in case they're interested in that. But now being post year one, now going into year two of being married specifically, or like the latter decade of being together, is there anything that you're like nervous about in terms of long-term commitment? I see you looking at your notebook and you're like, this was not on the outline.
You did not prepare me for this.
I did not.
Talk about a curveball. For me, I think it's the growth, right? I tend to, especially during my single years, I put Stan first, always, like myself first. And I always made sure that I was first. Marriage tests that. And you're no longer alone in this world, because now I have to answer for my partner, my wife. And then as kids come into it, I believe like Stan as a whole is 100%. When we got married, Stan is 50%. 50% Stan, 50% Mary. When kids come into the picture, Stan is 25%. So I'm no longer putting myself as a priority. I've always felt comfortable with who I am. But at the same time, I am now at a position where I'm putting myself second, because I'm putting you first, your happiness, your well-being, and then I put myself. So I tell myself and remind myself that on a daily basis. So if things are a little gray, it's about restructuring and refocusing my attention on you. And I think that is what I want to continue to do, and allowing you to grow as an individual and us to grow as a partnership.
That's a big answer. Do you think that's contrary to like common rhetoric of people that are like, put yourself first? And obviously me, I'm like, self-love over everything, you know, because that's definitely not the answer that I expected, but it's like a big, noble answer. Maybe that's one of the things that changed between dating and marriage, because when you're dating, you're still putting yourself first. You're still wondering, how does this person fit into my life? And then when you're married, you're like, no, how do I fit into my person's life? Or we fit into each other's. Obviously, it's more synergistic, hopefully not. I hope you don't completely deprioritize yourself is all I'm saying.
No, not at all. I think with therapy and some of the TED Talks that I've listened to, and relationship building has a lot to do with putting your partner first. And while you're dating, there's still a lot of uncertainty there, depending on how much time you've already invested. You know, looking at our relationship early on, we spent so much time together, and it wasn't one of those things that I felt, I hate to say this, but there might be something better out there, because—
You did not feel that way.
I did not feel that way, no. The amount of time we spent together allowed me to see that, right? So I don't think people should waste their time if there's some sort of a question mark. I think that by the fourth date, you shouldn't know whether or not this is something I want to pursue. There shouldn't be any games. There shouldn't be any, he didn't call me back, she didn't call me back, he didn't text me back. It's been 2 days or so, right? If you're in it, you're in it. And I think that's what we did really well early on, is that we knew that there was a connection there. We knew that we wanted to spend a lot of time together, and it's exactly what we did, right? Early on, took a foreign trip together, moved in together fairly quickly, and that allowed us to build the foundation that we have today.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to a comment I got from Alyssa, and she said, honestly, I just want to hear general advice for finding a good partner. LOL. I know good people exist and your relationship was one of the testaments to that, but I'm so tired. There are so many not the best people out there. I'm not even dating right now, but the thought of getting back into it is intimidating and very scary. I definitely have more inner work to do before I'm emotionally prepared and psychologically strong enough to put myself out there again. But I know I and many other people are scared to put ourselves out there, especially after bad experiences. How do you hold space for being scared, but also allow yourself to try again? And how do you not second guess your decisions, whether it's to call it or keep trying on the third, fourth, or fifth date? She says, I just don't know how to exist in the dating space going forward. Okay. We did a lot of things right, a lot of things controversially, a lot of things maybe not what we'd recommend to others, but it kind of worked to us, right? But I think the big caveat here that I want to start with is that a lot of it is luck. For me, talking about dating is the same as talking about success. People are like, what made you successful? What made you so much money? And everybody wants to come on a podcast and said, I did XYZ. I worked really hard. I put myself out there. I took risks. And if you do the same, you can have what I have. And the truth is that we watch fabulous, amazing, the most extraordinary people we know do all the right things, read all the books, and have their careers and focus on themselves and date and put themselves out there. And they're so kind and so nice and so amazing. And yet they're like perpetually single late into their 30s. And it's challenging. It's like you really feel for them, especially because you were in your 30s when you met me, whereas I got really lucky early on. So all that to say, I think so much of it is luck. So anything we say here is with that subtext of luck. But to me, the way I see luck is a formula where opportunity meets preparation. So there's also this small piece, I would say it's like 80-20. I would say 80% of it is luck, but there's that 20% where you have to be prepared to receive the luck. Because even if the perfect person is right in front of you, but you didn't do that 20% of work on yourself, then you're not going to see it, or you're not going to receive it, or you're going to sabotage it. But in the same way, you have to, like, obviously keep trying is the big thing, but in a kind of like energetically wholesome way, as opposed to an energetically lacking way of like, I need somebody to fill this. I need to find a partner. I need to check that social box. And people give like silly advice. They're like, it'll come when you least expect it, or just so many conflicting messages I think people receive about dating. So what are your, like, what's your general advice? Because you were in it longer than me. So I think this is a question that's more for you to answer.
Yeah, I think that's a loaded question, to say the least. And I think you're right about the equation of luck, preparation, and
opportunity.
Yeah. So what I did early on, prior to us getting into our relationship, is I took a cleanse, in a sense. So I went 3 months without going on any dates and just really focused on the person that I wanted to be with. And I even wrote it down. And I would look at that list on a daily basis and just subconsciously program it into my mind. And I'm a firm believer in the law of attraction, especially at that point in my life where I was looking and I wanted, right? So there was that. And then luck just so happened, you lived 12 miles away. You were also single at that point, and we matched. With our friends and colleagues, I think you can do everything right, but luck is just not there at that moment. And that shouldn't discourage you or anyone out there to continue to go out there and not necessarily date, but just have conversations. With the apps now, you can make a phone call or you can do a FaceTime right directly from the application. You don't have to send someone your number. There's no need. Public service announcement here and now is stop the dinner dates. There's no need for a dinner date. There's no need to sit there for hours on end and put on this circus of conversations.
You mean on a first date?
On a first date.
Stop the dinner dates on the first date.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Thank you. Just go out there, go for a walk in the park. That's what we did, right? We went for a walk and there was something there. And then next door was just this really cool restaurant. We had a bite. And then that progressed into having a drink, and the rest is history. But I think that's so important to remove the pressure from just having a conversation, not a date.
Yeah.
Now, people are just completely different when they're behind some sort of a technology like Hinge or an app or a phone or some sort of electronics, right? I think that's a great stepping stone, but it comes down to just putting yourself out there, having conversations, and being comfortable with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. The people I've dated before you.
There were people before me?
Well, I had so many like weird coffee dates that I actually had the opposite rule. Like, unless it's dinner, I'm not going. For some reason, you were an exception. There were a lot of things I did with you that I didn't do with anybody else I dated, which again, it's like, there's no formula. There's no right or wrong. There's these like controversial things about like, should you have sex on the first date? When should you meet family? When should you move in together or take a trip or, I don't know, get a dog or merge finance or whatever. Like, we violated so many of those, and especially me, and just the way I thought dating should be. For me, dinner was like an investment. Like, this person is willing to invest time with you. Whereas coffee felt too non-committal, where it could have almost, it could almost be a business meeting, you know, over coffee. But hours just flowed really nicely. It was first like, meet me here, let's go on a walk, right?
Yeah, and I made it very, very convenient for you, right? So yeah. I asked where you were. It was on a Sunday. And I said, why don't you just come down the street? Yeah. I'll meet you on the other side of town. Mm-hmm. And that way there's no commitment and let's just...
True.
Have a quick conversation in person. And we did that over the app and then started texting each other and so forth. So let me ask you this, with the dinner dates and your quote unquote investment, was there text messages, phone calls, and that kind of led to a dinner date?
Yeah.
So you felt some sort of a connection?
I would say one thing I'm adamant on that a lot of my friends don't do. I wish I could draw like a web of like things Mary would recommend. Not that anybody should follow it.
Coming soon to a PDF.
Right. Basically, I would always get on the phone. And that was one of the things I violated with you also. We didn't talk on the phone before. But again, that's because you picked a location that was so close to me. It was in the middle of a Sunday afternoon. We matched at 10:40 a.m. And we met that same Sunday at like 3:30 p.m. or 4 maybe, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was just a span of a couple hours. So I was like, okay, like I could literally walk over to the place you said to meet at and, you know, just talk to you that way. But usually, if somebody would ask me for on a dinner, I had this whole like, this was my process.
Copy paste.
Well, no, but we would text back and forth about something and say we're talking about a story, right? Or like talking about our lives. And I'd be like, oh, that reminds me, I have this really funny story related to that. And they'll be like, what is it? And I'll be like, it's too long to text. Let me just call you. So I just call right then and there, like before they can think, before I can think. And then that way, when I pick up the phone, I could go right into the story. I wouldn't have to be like, hey, hi, how are you? You know, I'd just be like, so, okay, one time I was at the and I go into the story, right? And then suddenly we're laughing and there's a little bit of like comfort with one another. And then from there, if that little phone call exchange went okay, I would go out for dinner. But you and I were talking before recording. The problem with dinners and the place where people dating are sleeping on is that usually if you matched with somebody on Sunday morning, right, the general consensus is, what are you doing Saturday night?
What are you doing this weekend?
Right?
Kind of thing. Next weekend, Friday
exactly.
night. Yeah.
So now you're waiting 6 days. And in those 6 days, what's happening is you're texting back and forth like teenagers, which can be cute and fun. I get it. We've done that too. But not before meeting, right? You're texting back and forth like teenagers. Now you're going into weird like sex and flirtations and things that are just premature and sometimes a little bit trashy.
Yeah.
You might be sending the wrong message.
You have then, other people that you're texting.
Exactly.
You things other, can get lost in translation.
Yep.
You're setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah, you're taking up energetic space. Then you're waiting until Saturday. On Saturday, there's this whole buildup of like, I've been texting this person and the conversation was so hot, so our dinner is going to be amazing. You were spending hours getting ready, especially if you're a gal usually. Then you commit to this multi-hour dinner. And then suddenly you don't have that text chemistry because I'm sorry, but dirty talking over text is different than holding a conversation over dinner. And in that whole time, you're wasting each other's time and you're creating more kind of opportunities for somebody to ghost you. Not saying that ghosting is appropriate ever. Like, obviously, that's the fault of the ghoster, but you're creating like more time and space in between where somebody doesn't text back because they're busy and then the other person's overthinking it, and then you're like, oh, I got ghosted, and then things are awkward to reconnect. And there's just like a lot that can go on. Whereas what we did well, and I will stand by this, so we matched at 10:40 a.m. and by 4 p.m., we were already together having a conversation, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the things that people fail to acknowledge. And the amount of time that goes by, just like, again, you said, is so much can happen within a few days.
Yeah.
Why not act on it? If it's on a Tuesday, go out and have a slice of pizza, whatever it may be, right?
Okay, sex on the first day, yes or no? Would you recommend?
I'd be a hypocrite if I said no.
Yeah, but I also wouldn't recommend it.
I wouldn't recommend it, no.
Okay, so we confessed.
Yeah.
We confessed. Do it that way, you will.
Don't do it. Or maybe just do it.
I wouldn't ever scold or shame someone. If a friend came to me and was like, it was the best, like we had so much chemistry and then I never do this, but we did it. Like it was so good, whatever, which is how I felt. I would be like, yeah, good for you, girl. Like, hell yeah. Like I would never, again, I would never slut shame somebody. But do I think it's the best thing to do? Maybe not. Like I could have probably stopped us.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
If I wanted to.
Me being the respectful man that I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's no shame in it whatsoever, either way. But I think waiting it out just to make sure that there's something there. I think we connected so well.
Okay. Yeah. That's a sticky one. So I don't know about that one. But I think the general consensus is to maybe not on the first time, just because, again, you want to build that anticipation, that buildup, although that chemistry, like you want to enjoy that instead of, you know, but again, that's under the like, social constructs of like, all they want from you is sex. And then as soon as you give it, they'll lose interest. I do not believe in that. I just do not believe it. Look at that. 5 years later, and you still seem pretty interested.
Yeah, very much so.
We did want to highlight this. Statistically speaking, I think most people do kind of. And what girls especially have to know is that when you have sex with somebody, you release a cascade of biochemical reactions that make you more attached to the person that you let in inside of you. That is just biological. So if you think that you are strong enough, you're independent, you feel empowered in your sexuality, and you think that you're able to like override that if, say, somebody is toxic or maybe just not for you, not necessarily toxic, if you think you're strong enough to override the biochemical cascade of lust and stay true to your values, then go have sex with whoever.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people don't realize how strong those attachments get formed after you sleep with somebody. You don't even know it's happening in your brain. It's just like happening. So if you have an orgasm, if you fake it, then that's a different story.
I think for a straight man, it's the complete opposite. There's so much buildup. And then once you climax, orgasm, it's completely done.
You're over it. You're going to sleep. Yeah. And even studies like down to the nitty gritty, like studies show that after orgasm, a woman will be more energized. Like it's like taking a shot of espresso and they'll like want to get up and do stuff. And whereas a man is less energized, he's like depleted of his energy, which is nuts, like biologically. So I don't know, do with that what you will, but I think it's important information. Okay, other things that we like violate, I guess, like, I don't know. We moved in together very quickly.
Yeah. I got you a toothbrush the second night. No.
You got me a toothbrush and then the big one was a blow dryer. For some reason, you were like really concerned about my wet hair. But when we say toothbrush, I mean this man, the second time I came over to his house. So it's like we met the first time, but then the second time I came over, there was an electric toothbrush waiting for me on my side of the sink, like an electric one that plugs in and charges and is like $100.
Shout out to Amazon Prime, next day delivery. I was like, she's coming back. I got to get ready. Mouthwash is not going to work.
This was not like your dentist gave you a Crest toothbrush that you just took out of your drawer. This was like set up. And then the third day was the blow dryer.
Mm. Yeah. I can't stomach the fact of walking around the house with wet hair or just being wet. You have a tendency of air drying yourself.
Yeah, I drip dry.
Yeah.
Proud drip dryer.
No.
This is also coming from a bald man.
Yeah, I don't have a blow dryer. So I was like, what's missing in this house?
It's like, I need somebody with lots of hair so I can put a blow dryer.
We have enough hair for the both of us.
It's true. That's true. And we did start kind of like moving along pretty quickly. At first, I felt like one of those moms that like didn't want their kids to know that they were dating somebody because my sister was splitting time between our mom and her dad. So on the days that she was with her dad, I would stay with you. But then on the days that she was with our mom, I would go back to my parents because I was living at my parents' house at the time.
Which was very challenging for you because you just came back to the States from Calgary. You were away for a little while and then you come back and you're building this relationship with your sister. And then this bearded man comes into your life and just kind of
takes over,
sweeps you off your feet.
Yeah,
now you come to me.
I was juggling a lot and I was in school and driving like an hour and a half to get to school when I stayed the night at your house. So we definitely like moved quicker. Again, do as we say, not as we do, but I feel like we moved quicker than we would probably recommend. Would you say that in terms of like moving in together?
For the average person, it might be that much more challenging, you know. The house that's ours now, it's pretty spacious. So I think the typical person moves into maybe a one or two bedroom and space is scarce as it is. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll go into the design factor a little bit later how you brought your design in. I already had the place already
furnished
the way that that I thought was nice. And then you come into it and with a wand, just kind of change everything up, which I was totally open for. But I think your own space is really important.
Yeah.
About 3 years ago, I started putting together a playlist with uplifting, inspiring, and empowering songs. I originally did this for myself because I love music of all different genres, and every time I would notice a song that just made me feel good, I would add it to my self-love playlist. And now there are over 300 songs on my Spotify self-love playlist. And these tracks are perfect for when you're getting ready, trying to hype yourself up, or going through a struggle and need a reminder for how badass you are. If you love music as much as I do, then go to maryscupoftea.com/playlist to get the Spotify link. It will ask you for your email so that I can send you this self-love playlist. And full transparency, this will also put you on my email list where I send out a monthly newsletter about stuff I'm thinking about, personal things, things I don't really share on social media, and all the happenings in the Mary's Cup of Tea world. So go to maryscupoftea.com/playlist and let's start jamming to my self-love playlist together.
You said you wrote a list of the kind of person that you wanted. I'm sure our listeners would want to know a few things that were on that list. And that makes me want to highlight that making a list of your non-negotiables, and not just non-negotiables, I like to do three columns. So must have, must not have, and then would be nice. So must have is like non-negotiable. I need this person to play pickleball with me. Must not have them, I don't know, raising their voice during fights because that really triggers me. And then would be nice is things that you're rather flexible on, like, I don't know, if they make a certain amount of money or whatever those things are. So there's like a yes, no, maybe column.
Yeah.
That's personally what I did for me. What was on your list?
Yeah. Shallow is going to be how you look. beautiful, stunning. And the crazy thing is, I said that I wanted her to have two tattoos. And that's the mind-blowing factor right there, that you had two tattoos when we met. You got another one a few months into our relationship. But no, the must-have was a compassionate, loving individual who also spoke Russian. For me, it was important. Why? Because my family speaks Russian. And to me, having you connect with them on a deeper level than, hi, how are you, so important. Non-negotiables would be racist, somebody who is just nasty to people, specifically in the service industry, not driven, I probably said non-compassionate. And the last category would be nice is
Jewish.
Yeah, Jewish culturally.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we don't practice to a point where things get a little uncomfortable, for me, I think that was an important thing to have as well. Traveler. I mean, you do most of the travel.
I went over the top on that one.
And you definitely pulled me out of the house.
Yeah.
So that's kind of just to name a few. But,
yeah.
That's kind of where my list started.
But it just goes to show how powerful these lists can be with like an intention. You don't have to be too attached to it, but there are not that many Russian-speaking, let alone Russian-speaking Jews in Arizona. That is right. Not a big community. And the fact that like my family's from the Bay Area and then my single mom like moved to Arizona randomly because she used to work for DHL and then that company shut down, but she stayed here. But then I moved away to Canada to study and then I came back right around the time that you were single. Like that is just nuts. Like I think about that often, how I can't believe we just lived 15 miles from each other.
Yeah, talk about luck, right?
Yeah, full exactly. Circle. And my mom has gotten her car serviced at your dad's old shop.
Right.
Because it was like the only Russian speaking like mechanic kind of in the valley. And people would know of your dad. So we had these weird little connections.
Mind blowing.
Again, it's
mind-blowing. One of those things that you don't make a list and then just have it get lost in your drawer somewhere, right? You make a list, you focus on that list, and you look at that list as often as possible until you find what you're looking for, until it comes to you. It takes time. Everything takes time. Nothing grand or wonderful happened overnight.
True.
Even an overnight quote unquote success takes years in the making.
Mm-hmm. One practical thing that I think a lot of people could do if you're kind of like Alyssa, who she's not currently actively dating right now, but she knows she wants to eventually, but like is a little bit scared. One thing I think everybody can practice, single, dating, in a relationship, married, whatever. But I think more people can go out in public in an open body position. This is something I see when people do it, it's refreshing and I love it. And I just want to stare at them. They're magnetic. Like I just want to talk to them. When people don't do it, it's a big ick for me. So meaning if you're walking while looking down on your phone, not looking where you're going, how on earth are you ever going to meet anyone, a partner, a friend, somebody who could change your life? If you're like all contracted with your body language, looking at your phone, tripping over some shit and just like not being present. Same thing, like you go somewhere, say you're going out to dinner with a friend, like be a little bit more open, like strike up a conversation with the people at the table next to you. We do that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, we always were like, hey, what's that dessert you ordered? Like just practice kind of being energetically open. I think that's really helpful for meeting people in general, because we're so caught up on the apps and the amount of toilet swiping that I know all people my age are doing. You know, how are you going to meet somebody when you're sitting on the toilet, literally going through hundreds of people and then complaining that dating is hard? Like the amount of pressure that you put on yourself to date and find the perfect person is directly proportional to how exhausted you're going to be from that journey. Whereas if you make it fun, if you start getting out there, it doesn't necessarily mean getting on the apps. It could be doing activities. And some people are like, oh, well, no guys hang out at the pottery class that I want to take. Bullshit.
Yeah, bullshit.
Bullshit. There are hot guys in my yoga classes.
What?
There are eligible bachelors that I've tried to set our friends up in our pickleball courts. There are people where I've seen like very distinguished looking gentlemen at the library because our library is next door to the medical school.
Yeah.
Then go to that library. Like you never know.
Very well put. And I'll add to it. So I had a coworker. She just got out of a relationship. She's been on these dating sites. And I personally hate these dating apps because they really affect and fuck with your self-esteem, really, because you could start a conversation and all of a sudden it's ghosted and messages stop being delivered. And now you're like, is it me? It is me. Why else would they stop? Right. It's just fucking toxic.
Yeah.
So what I challenged her to do is I said, listen, you're an introvert and a little insecure. So I challenge you to go to a restaurant, go to a bar, sit down at the bar and just have a drink and dinner by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she met someone the first night she did it.
What?
And she said that she had a couple of people come up to her, a couple of guys come up to her, and one was completely annihilated and drunk. Oh. But she kind of just brushed him off, and he was very respected and walked off. Somebody else sat down next to her, and they started talking about sports, because she loved sports, baseball, I think was. And they started talking about the players and the D-backs here locally. And then they sparked up a conversation, and that led to another date. So the moral of the story is, it's perfectly okay to spark up conversations. And you feel so relieved when you're not out there looking for your partner, but more or less just having conversations with people, because humans are community-driven animals in a sense, right?
Yeah. And I think we get really kind of like arrogant when we look at somebody, we judge them, and we're like, that is not my husband. That's not my partner. Why would I talk to them? Okay, first of all, don't be judgmental. Second of all, even if that's not your partner, like they might know a friend and you might have a mutual friend in common. You add each other on Facebook. You know, it's so fun when you go on Facebook.
2 degrees of separation.
You're like, no way, you know this person. Oh yeah, they used to work with me. Like that kind of stuff happens all the time if you're open to it. Of course, all of this is knowing that, you know, you got to be, especially as a woman, like going out, sitting at a bar alone. Yeah. If I encountered somebody annihilated, I would have probably left and felt very unsafe. But good for her for being like...
We get so lost in our minds and in our thoughts. Yeah. Now, that shouldn't discourage you, let alone have you put your guard up. Definitely have your guard up. But I think it's so important just to go out there and have conversations about topics that you enjoy, right? And if that person doesn't can't relate, okay, that's fine. Let's talk about something that you can. And it doesn't have to go beyond that. Mm-hmm. It's so important.
Yeah. It's also good character building, confidence building. It's a
good... You know, for me, I've been in business with my dad for a very long time, and that helped me connect with people, have conversations. I think for me, what helped me early on when I would go to these events is just to have a few open-ended questions in my back pocket. Like that's what I would resort to. And I think that everyone should have them. So you're not stuck thinking, what should I ask or what should I say? Have a few questions that are just like, engaging and very open-ended. Mm-hmm. I think that's so important for everyone to have.
Yeah. You can make those up yourself. There's plenty on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
There's some fun ones too, like they're depending on the context of where you are going. And then I would also add, have a couple stories about yourself in your back pocket.
Yeah. You want to share an example? What was an open-ended question? Or
I usually...
Talk about the weather, for example. What do you think of the weather?
No, that's a terrible example.
But the where I'm getting with that is that you can say, oh, the weather is nice, but what do you like to do when it's this kind of weather outside? And now that person is kind of like, oh, I like to go walk around the park. Oh, which park do you go to? And that can kind of start.
You follow, yeah, I get that. Well, for me, where I would dive into, if somebody asked me about the weather, I'd be like, do you want to know something really funny? My grandma is obsessed with the weather. Every time I call her, she changes the subject to the weather because
literally yesterday,
she called to wish us a happy 1 year anniversary. And then I was like, I said, I hope we're together as long as you and grandpa are, because they just celebrated 55 years. And she literally went, yeah, so how's the weather over there? Like changed the subject so abruptly. And we always, you know, whenever we're thinking about what to wear according to the weather, Stan's always like, call your grandma. She knows the forecast. It's true. Like she tracks as her love language. Like she wants to know what the outside is like where you live. So I would kind of like tell people a little synopsis about how my sweet old grandma connects through.
You see, there's you can take any topic and that can just kind of into, it can spiral into this huge conversation that can be hours long.
Yep. Social skills are important. I agree. Where are we? Gosh, we covered so much, but let's go into, okay, you've been dating longer than I have. We alluded to that earlier. Everybody keeps asking us to talk about our age gap, and I don't know what there is to talk about, truthfully. I guess people are wondering, like, how did your families take it? Do you feel weird that you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, so I can say that my grandparents on my mom's side have a 12-year age gap. So the family...
Family's chilling.
Family was good with it,
yeah,
I think. But I can say this, that men in general... mature a lot later than women do. So I can tell you that I was probably no good until I reached my late 20s.
I was no good.
Yeah. So you would not get any value from this dude. So I dated quite a bit. Yeah. And again, my longest relationship at the time was about 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And my family was not very supportive of my past relationships.
For various reasons.
Right. And I think that women mature a lot quicker than men do. So get yourself somebody that a little bit older, that has their shit together, that has a really good solid foundation, that has a good head on their shoulders. And I think that's the most important takeaway here.
Again, I don't want this advice to be like misconstrued. I was 21 when I met you. Would I recommend just any 21-year-old to date people in their 30s? No.
Yeah, same here.
But I know it's like, yeah, you got to know the difference between what happens statistically, which is that, yes, people take advantage. People who are more well off have more leverage to, you know, screw you over in different types of ways. Yes, there are risks to it. And the general trends and the general statistics also don't apply to everybody. Like, there are anomalies. Now, our single friends who are in their 30s, would I recommend that they expand their dating preferences up to 50? Yes, 100%. 100%. It is different when you get older. So yes.
It's a really good point because I've met guys that are in their mid-20s that are very mature, have everything set for themselves, and they can't find the one.
True.
Right?
Maybe they want to date somebody in their...
Yeah, yeah. It's hard because you look at statistics and then you look at us and we just...
Yeah.
Are completely different.
I would caution people against looking at one example.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially with, you know, influencers on the internet, myself included, like, and we come from a certain cultural background, which makes it just very different. Like, my parents were 11 years apart. My great-grandparents were 12 years apart. My mom and stepdad currently are 12 years apart. Your grandparents, you know, like, we kind of come from that kind of culture. So that, and having family support is important. And I do understand when family is not supportive, if you are very young and your partner is a lot older, like, there are risks to that. But I knew for myself, I was the anomaly because I had plan B always. I had my education always. I had my savings always. I had a decent head on my shoulders.
When I met your parents for the first time, it was one of those things that I felt insecure about myself.
Because you were older?
Yeah. But
really?
At the same time, I was like, you know, you and I, we connected. You have so much going for you. You have a great head on your shoulders. You're wise beyond your years kind of thing. And, you know, to meet your mom, that was a little nerve-wracking for me because of the age gap. But I'm pretty comfortable with myself. And I knew that I can show up as I am. And I just let the rest kind of unfold.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if my mom was skeptical of you, which she is with any person that I bring into my
life.
And
she still is.
She still is a little bit. But it's not because of your age.
Yeah, right.
That's not why my mom doesn't like you. It's just because she has been through the ringer with men in general. So I think she's always been on guard with who I date. But for her, the signs of, like, good character is definitely kind of some of those old school values of, like, is he stable? Does he have a house? Does he have a good job? Is he, you know, like, a good, kind person? As opposed to, I think, a lot
I'm
of...
glad that was the last one on the list.
Yeah, a good, kind person. That was the first one. But you know what? One thing about you is that it takes longer to get to know you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
I've
you're
been
more
told
reserved.
That before. Yeah. I don't let anyone in. Or I don't let just anyone in.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You have to prove yourself before I just give my trust out.
Yeah. And that's what my mom said too to you. Mm-hmm. That's why my mom was like, I don't know how he feels. I don't know where he stands.
I don't know him at all.
Like, yeah. It takes a while. You're
hard
reserved.
To read me too. Yeah.
It is. But all that to say, every situation is different. I love our age gap. I also don't think about it that
Same.
Much to love it that much. But I am really grateful that we met when we did, because like you said, you were no good and I was still in diapers.
Yeah, right. Bad.
So bad. Sorry, I had to. Okay. So when I moved in, I waved my magic wand and started redecorating everything. And I still am all the time.
That's
something that does not change. I'm always moving stuff, buying stuff, swapping furniture. And Lacey asked, how do you combine household styles? My partner had his whole house decorated before I moved in. And now that I'm here, I realize how different our tastes are. And he actually cares. So it's not as if I can just take over and do my own thing without him caring. I want to find our style, but we are starting on different ends of the spectrum. And his sci-fi and toy-like home decor have got to go. Just like some of my stuff has to go. Help.
Wow. Yeah.
Any thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, the growth is extremely important. And I could see the feeling of how it would be intrusive. So if you came in here and decided to just change everything, who am I, right? I'm questioning my identity. The person that I am, the design is a reflection of who I am. Yeah. So if you're coming in here and changing everything, I feel like you don't love me for who I am. You want to change me. That's a red flag. But what you can do is start with small pieces, which is what we did, right? We sold the big entertainment center, one piece.
That was a big piece.
That was a big piece.
Start with small places. First, the big entertainment center out.
I think there's baby steps to this, as opposed to let's change everything. That can get exhausting. Thinking yeah. about it and doing it can definitely become exhausting. So I think if you focus on one room of the house and do that, and prove that you have some good taste in materials and in paint and in furniture, everything. And then yeah. that can kind of be like your aha moment. Mm-hmm. That's what we did so well. I thought I had good taste in things.
And you did.
Did.
No, you do. But I remember telling my friends in early stages of our relationship that like, I came to his house and there was actual furniture and the mattress wasn't on the floor.
I have an appreciation for good quality things. But when I bought this house, I had to fill it relatively quickly, right? So I went out there and started buying things. And I'm not the person that goes into a furniture store and starts buying things. That's cringy for me. If you go into Ashley's and start buying things there, I personally like Facebook Marketplace, mm-hmm. Craigslist, like unique pieces that you can kind of piece together your home or your house and then call it a home. Yeah. And that's what you do really well too. And I think together over the years, we've swapped out the bulky, dark furniture mm-hmm. to more light and airy pieces that we have now. And it's never ending. That's the thing. So I think that as we evolve and grow as people, I think our tastes and our furniture has to evolve as well.
Yeah, for sure. Like I loved coming over to your dark mahogany wood bachelor pad. And I loved when you gave me a small room to call my studio, which is the same room that we're recording in today. So you just let me have my creative freedom with that. And then the next stepping stone was like, hey, this like big entertainment center is like this big dark spot that is making the whole house darker. Mm-hmm. And most of the things you like really agreed with me on, you know what took you a long time to let go of? The pool table.
Yeah.
The pool table. Yeah. That took you for exactly 3.5 years when we put it up for sale. It's, 3 years, 8 months.
Yeah. It was one of the things that my father and I played, my uncles and I played. So they would come over, have a couple of drinks, and we would play pool. And that was great. But I realized that it was just too bulky. And we can do so much more, right? There has to be an aha moment of what it might be.
But I let you have your time with that. I never like pushed you to sell the pool table. No. We worked with it.
Sometimes you got to make the decision on your own as opposed to having someone poke you.
Yeah. I'd say the advice I'd give Lacey, if you have the luxury of real estate, split up the rooms or the spaces, the corners. You can even do little corners of your house into like his, hers, ours.
Yeah.
Kind of like finances, I guess.
Yeah.
It's kind of how we approach finances.
Yeah.
So that there's dedicated places for you, your stuff, your creative freedom, you to experiment. And then him and his, you know, toy like furniture or whatever that is. And then hopefully you can look at each other's and kind of like get inspired, right? Maybe he looks at your little corner and he's like, I actually really like how Lacey did this. And mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind if that was in a common area. So all your common areas, you definitely want to approach together. Like, if you're looking for a piece, do not settle until you find one that you both like. That is so important.
Yeah. And then these collections of toys, I know firsthand, can be priceless sometimes, right? So you don't want to just put them in storage. It's kind of like a trophy where you want to you want to display it. And that's perfectly fine. I think, like you said, if you have the luxury of space and real estate.
And there are cool and classy ways to display it. Like just listened to an interior design podcast. And one of the questions that they answered on there was like, how do I make childproofing my home less ugly? And Lacey, I'm sorry, I'm just assuming that your partner has all these sci-fi toys, but you probably have a similar question. Like, how do I honor his I don't even know what to call them. I'm so clueless in this world. But some of these things are expensive. They're collectibles. They're cool to have. They're fun to look at. But there are ways to display them in a way that could suit you both. So one of the designers said, for example, your kids' art, buy a matching set of 12 black frames and hang them up on like a gallery wall in your hallway. And then every year you and your kids sit down together and you decide which of their art do they want in these frames that inspires them. So that way you have your piece of like the nice frames, or maybe in Lacey's case, it's like nice shelving.
Shelving, yeah, right? Floating shelves.
Floating shelves. And then your partner can put whatever he wants on there and you kind of piece it together that way. And then he still has his.
Yeah. And it can be organized. And then the paint of the walls can kind of like bring it out even more so. Like you helped me with my office and it looks so good. And it took 5 years, right? It took 5 years for you to step in and help me with the office. But I'm so glad. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer than we would hope.
It's fun team building too. I think it's so important. And the biggest advice I can give also for just redecorating, and I'm going to contradict what I said earlier, which is like swapping furniture. We're always, everything in our house is secondhand. So I'm addicted to Facebook Marketplace. I'm always thinking of like what could be upgraded whenever we have some disposable income. But I'm going to backtrack on saying that if you're really trying to elevate a space, redo a space, take everything out of there, take everything off the walls. Live with it completely blank. Like your office, between the time we painted and decided to redo it and the time we hung the last piece of art, it was a month. It was a whole month. And that doesn't even include the time it took to think about it.
Yeah. And keep in mind, when you said, let's paint it, I didn't want to do it at the end of the day.
Like you most, said, let's paint it.
Well, I didn't want to paint the ceiling. The thing is the amount of labor that goes into it, right? We look at this, it's like, oh, I'm so tired. I don't want to have to do it. But there's a certain point where you just have to lift yourself up and say, just get it done.
It pays off.
It pays off.
We feel very passionately about home decor just because we've found that it strengthens our bond. It makes the house feel more like home.
Yeah,
it makes us like appreciate each other because we made this together. Like I definitely think home decor is a place to invest your relationship into and trying to make it work for the both of you.
For sure. And there's a lot of times that I just bite my tongue and just say, okay, let's just go with it.
Like what?
Redecorating, moving things around. You love to do it. You love to tinker. And with me, again, it's like you fall back into, I just want to sit on the couch and watch TV. But you can do that anytime.
I don't let him sit too long, though.
It's not fun.
I always
it's just
get you
there,
up.
There's this like pull of what you want to lay down, but at the same time, you want to get things done. So just get things done. It's more fun. It's more rewarding than just laying on the couch.
You're a yes man, though. You've never really said no to things I want to do.
Yeah. And again, it's just because it's more fun saying yes than it is no.
Yeah, because you're not going to remember the time you were laying on the couch watching TV, but you are going to remember the time you tried to take off the ceiling fan and then it came crashing down onto you. So you had to lift your arms up for an extended amount of time and they were dying and you're up on this ladder and you're laughing and my mom was FaceTiming me and I'm like, I can't hold this fan anymore. It's going to drop. And you had to run over and get tools. Like that was a memory made.
Yeah. And I touched the negative and positive really quick and sparks flew. And yeah, thanks to, you know, memories.
Got it's electrocuted all about memories. Make the mess. But did you die? No. Okay. Somebody asked, what is something new you've learned about each other post-marriage?
For me, it's going to be the decorating for you. The interior design. That is something that's new and you're so passionate about. Looking from the sideline, I want to support it even more so, right? In the beginning, it's just like, you know, you have some hurdles. You might paint the wall and you're like, well, did we mess up? Is that something that I really wanted? Mm-hmm. Well, okay, trial and error in a sense.
Yeah. I went from tinkering with small pieces to taking bigger risks.
Yeah. And it's because you do the research. So everything that you do is pretty much validated. So who am I to say no based on just my internal feelings? Let's be honest here.
One thing about my husband, I tell people this all the time. Well, I tell my friends this. For some reason, he always respects my opinion. And I think it's because you know how crazy I drive myself researching. But I do love how by the time I decide to do something, even if you're skeptical at first, you're like, okay, I know Mary. I know she wouldn't just say she wants to do something if she didn't research all the ins and outs and everything about it.
Yeah.
You know, and you really trust me. That's what it is. You respect me and you really trust my judgment.
Yeah.
Yeah, the decorating thing, that's something new about me in general. I don't know if that's a post-marriage thing. It could be like a little nesting thing because I always think about our nursery and I do want to have certain things in our home like ready, you know, like a wall of photos that I want to do. Now I'm at the point where I'm like, okay, well, we don't want to buy any like dangerous sculptures that could come crashing down on a toddler. So maybe that was like the push, but the interior design is just new in general for me. Somebody asked, how do you get through bitterness after an argument?
Mm.
We have to talk about this.
Okay, you go ahead and take this one.
Okay, so our toxic traits, both of us, were both passive aggressive. Neither of us are aggressive. We don't really yell and scream and fight, but we will silent dream it. We will let shit build up. We get irritated and it lingers. So how do you get through bitterness after an argument? Do you want me to start?
Please.
Okay, first, I think you have to hug.
As hard as it is,
even if you don't want to. John and Julie Gottman, they're a couple that have been doing research on relationships for like 50 years. And they've done long-term research on couples that make it and couples that don't. And they say that they can predict if a couple will make it or not based on how they fight. There's two things. One is during a fight and one is when things are good. So let me start with during a fight. During a fight, one of the telltale signs that a couple is strong and they're going to make it through hard times is if they can laugh together while being mad at each other. So for example, we're mid-fight and somebody cracks a joke and you roll your eyes and you're annoyed and you don't want to laugh, but it's funny. You know, and we've had those moments.
Yeah.
Right. Or when you can almost kind of like a little bit of self-deprecate, like, I know I'm, you know, I get this way sometimes. And the other person is like, you think? And then you kind of like, you can laugh about it, right? That you think is not a threat. It's more of like, we share this, you know, experience together. So that's one, is being able to laugh during a fight.
I think that would be very difficult to do because if you're really upset at each other, and you're fighting, small little phrases can really crawl under your skin.
I know. But sometimes things are...
It's different when you're just, you know that you're in love. You know that small little things just can't affect the relationship. But go ahead, sorry.
But fights happen.
They do.
We fight. We fought like a couple weeks ago. No, like a month ago.
Yeah.
For no reason. But it's that moment where you're like, what are we even fighting about? And if you can laugh about that, as opposed to double down on your side, like that's what John and Julie Gottman are referring to. Or there was one example they gave where, say you're mad at each other, you're going through a phase of not talking, but like your husband like still makes you a sandwich or they're still like, hey, do you want me to drop this package off for you? You know what I mean? Like even mid-fight.
Yeah, okay.
And we do that.
Yeah, that's very valid.
Second thing is the bid for connection. I've talked about this on the podcast before and it went mega viral on TikTok and everybody was like so upset about it, but I don't care. I'm sticking by this one. A bid for connection is when somebody says, look at something I like. Look at this bird. Look at this tree. Look at the flower. Look at the sunset. Look at the moon. And you're like, oh yeah, that's so pretty. That's the difference between you making it in your long-term relationship and not and hating each other. And a lot of times when you get into routines and stuff, you literally ignore your partner. You're like, I don't care to hear about this sunset. But the bid for connection is anything that's important to your partner, you give them some kind of sign that you're listening, you care, you're looking at the same thing together. And they say that that's one of the big...
Yeah, I love that. It's like a little, hey, I'm still here, just checking in. Not directly, maybe indirectly, but there's something there that says, hey, I'm still in it. Are you?
Yeah.
It might not be a direct way of asking, but like you said, the flowers, the bird, the sunset, right? I think walks together really build on that as well. So if you get into an argument, hey, do you still want to go for a walk tonight? You and I go for a walk.
We've gone on a lot of silent walks, if we're being honest.
Absolutely, yeah.
But we're still doing something together.
Yeah.
I'm like, do you still want to watch that show with me?
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, fine.
It's hard to swallow that pill. And what works for me is, looking back, is how long have we been in this? And we've had so many wonderful experiences, so many wonderful days together, that this little bump in the road, hopefully it's always just a little bump in the road, will not affect the relationship collectively. So this is not what our relationship is. This is just more of like a little test or a little bump in the road, like I said. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I swallow my pride, and it takes some time, right? I'm the kind of person that just let it linger for 24 hours, 36 hours.
This is something new I've learned about you.
What's that?
Well, maybe it's not new that I've learned about you, but I'm finally willing to accept the thing about you. You're not letting it linger intentionally. You're not like, I'm going to give her the silent treatment to hurt her. You're like, I need some space to think.
Yeah.
And you always come back.
Yeah.
And I tend to push you to come talk about it earlier than you're ready.
You know, what's funny is that we had this conversation a few months into the relationship. And I'm going to go back to the book of 101 questions to ask before you get engaged. And one of the questions that I bring up pretty often, here you are rolling your eyes, is when I come home or when you come home from work or
a stressful day,
how do you want me to approach you? And there's two different ways, which is approach you and ask you what your problem was. Tell me about it.
How can I make you
feel better?
Let's
sit down and have a conversation. Or B, which is give you your time. And when you're ready, you approach me and we can have the conversation. I'm B, give me my time.
Gather yourself.
Gather my thoughts, my emotions. And then I'm ready. You're the opposite. You're A, ask me. And if you're not asking me, there's an issue.
Then I feel like you don't care.
Right.
This is the biggest point of friction in our relationship.
Yeah. And I think it goes across the board for all relationships. There's two different people that are coming together to start a relationship and live together, which is very challenging on its own. But understanding that, I think, is going to be such a wonderful moment for people to realize that. And I mean, you just said it. It took you some time, but you're at a point where...
Well, I think there's lots of moments like these where it's like, I process like this and he processes like that and his love language is this and my love language is that. And there's lots of points like that. What makes it extra difficult is when your way is directly contradictory to my way. So you needing space like threatens me because I'm the exact opposite. If you give me space, I feel like you don't care or whatever. And it's hard to meet in the middle, especially with something like that, because what is the middle, right? What is the middle without one person coming before they're ready or the other person feeling like they're suppressed?
And vice versa, feeling attacked when you need room and you need room to breathe, you have nowhere to turn and you feel like you're against a wall and you're being attacked direct head on, which is very challenging on its own. So there is a compromise where you give each other some time. And when you're ready, you can always come back to the middle ground and have a conversation.
Yeah. I think I need to remind myself that when things are quiet, it's not because I come from a household. My dad would give me silent treatments for months. And still, right now, we're on an almost 3-year silent treatment. And this is where, like, don't take anything personally comes in general. But especially with you, with your partner who you know loves you and who's looking out for your best interests and is trying to also heal a part of themselves within the relationship. It's me reminding myself that you're not deliberately being quiet to hurt me, because that's what my dad would do. It was like a deliberate attempt to get back at me for something I said or did.
Yeah.
I think I need to remind myself that it's not about me. It's really about you needing your space to process, because I've always been pleasantly surprised by how you approach me when you're ready. You're always open, you're always more understanding, you're always, you know, like in our wedding episode, we had a very perfect example of a fight we had early on in our wedding planning and engagement. And that was a good example of that. So,
yeah, for everyone out there,
how do you get through bitterness after an argument? You hug, you recognize each other's coping styles.
Yeah.
Try to respect those. But mostly, a lot of things get better after you hug. And you'll hug begrudgingly at first.
Yeah. That's short amount of time makes a world of a difference.
Yeah.
A few hours can make a huge impact.
Of hugging?
Of space.
Oh, damn it. See? Yeah. Do you see? I'm like, fuck yes, let's hug for a few hours. You're like, no, please. Just let me breathe. Okay. Last fun one to close. What's our next big commemorative trip? What are we thinking? Oh, we're not settled yet. So we're just throwing stuff out there right now.
Yeah. We talked about Asia. Both of us would have loved.
It's just not going to work.
It's not going to work.
So weather stuff. They have hurricanes.
Back
at the time.
To Europe we go.
But like Eastern Europe.
Croatia,
maybe Slovenia, Croatia.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's it. Yeah. We talked about it and we talked about a domestic trip as well coming up here soon, but we want to do a foreign international trip and Croatia is on my list.
Same. Something that's not too expensive.
Yeah.
Fun and relaxing.
We're budget travelers.
We are budget travelers. I think places like Greece and Italy, like, are they beautiful? Yes, but they're so overwhelming financially in terms of the things to do. I kind of want to be in a place where there's really not that much to do. I mean, every place has its charm.
Yeah, but we don't like to hang out on the beach for days on end. It's something that we just don't like. We like to explore the towns, the small towns, and hop around a little bit.
Yeah, but this time I think I might. Hopefully I'll be pregnant. So hopefully I will want to hang out on the beach for days on end. And then we want to do a national park trip, maybe Montana or something.
Yeah. My birthday is coming up. So maybe we'll do something then.
Yeah. That's what we're thinking. Okay. Closing thoughts.
Just, I wish everyone love. I think everyone has so much love to give and receive that I hope that everyone finds their person. I'm so happy that I'm married to you and I found my person. It took some time. So just understand that it doesn't come easy. And I had to go through the ring of fire multiple times. I think
that's really bad. That's what they call like when you give birth and then it's like where your vagina stretches the most to get the baby's head out.
I was thinking about Johnny Cash, but okay.
Okay, sorry. Oh my God. Oh, it's that song.
Bad.
Right?
Bad.
So bad.
Peace and love. That's all I gotta say.
All right.
Bye. Till next time.
One last thing before we farewell, my self-lovers. If you've been enjoying the Mary's Cup of Tea podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you could leave a review on Apple or rate the show on Spotify. You can do this by searching for the show, Mary's Cup of Tea. Scroll all the way down on Apple Podcasts and you'll see stars where you can click one of the stars and leave a few kind words. It just means so much to me because I'm so behind the scenes when I'm podcasting, so I don't really get to see the impact of the show unless you leave a review. And on Spotify, there's just a button that says rate the show and it'll let you put however many stars you want. Your feedback helps the podcast grow, and as someone whose love language is words of affirmation, your kind words mean the world to me. Thank you so much for supporting the show and helping me spread the gift of self-love. I love you all so much, and I will talk to you in next week's episode.